Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance?
Real energy.
My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Alta Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Alta Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Alta Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit AltaRush.com, AltaRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Alta Rush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Chlorella? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with the diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with vaccine researcher and author Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, now proudly sponsored by the Natural Farm Source in tribute to the late Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Go to homefirst.com and click on the store button for vitamin A, vitamin C, probiotics, and other supplements to stay healthy naturally. We are here live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour. 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. And we are proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. And archives are available at both websites, blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour and naturalnewsradio.com. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. Be sure to hit 1 if you want to talk to the host with a question or comment. And you can email us during the week, drtenpenny@gmail.com and attorney@vaccinerights.com. This is March 2nd, 2015. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Sherry, pleasure and honor to be with you again this evening. You hanging in there okay?
Oh, it's these days seem to get longer and longer, don't they, Alan? And the weeks get longer and longer.
I have spent years telling people, you know, above all, pace yourself because this is not a short fight. And now I am finding myself struggling to figure out how to do exactly that. No shortage of things to do, but maybe sometimes feels like there's a shortage of time to do it in. But we keep on keeping on, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, it seems as though there are a lot of people waking up and getting involved, and I think they're making a difference. I think they're making their phone calls to their legislators. I think they're organizing in their communities, and I really hope that people will just keep moving forward, because we won't know, you know, as the expression goes, we won't know how it all turns out until the fat lady sings, you know, meaning we won't know until these legislative sessions are done for this particular term how these things are going to turn out in all of these states.
And, you know, Sherry, I want to throw in a comment here because I know some people feel like there isn't much going on. And it's, you know, it's hard to really know what's going on unless you're making something go on yourself or part of a group or effort. I am aware of at least a few different, what I think are independent of one another, different activities going on. And so I want to encourage folks to not, it's way too early in the game for people to be discouraged. And I see and hear some comments of people talking sort of in already defeated kind of terms, and I want to say, whoa, wait a minute. You know, just because a bill gets introduced doesn't mean the law, you know, has changed or is even going to change. There are far more bills that are introduced than end up becoming laws, first of all, just in very general terms. And bills often go through many steps before they die and don't do anything, or they get rewritten or reworded or debated and changed and so forth. So there are a lot of different steps going on. So if you know about a bill in your state, or you are hearing talk about one maybe about to be introduced, that's just a starting place for somebody's agenda, you know, with whatever that bill ultimately says. Not necessarily by any means a done deal of where it's going. So there's plenty of time left for people to get involved. But Sherry, I can't stress strongly enough that this is not a situation where there's a lot of things people can do to inform themselves, to stay on top of what's going on, to share information with one another. Those are all wonderful things, but you've got to participate in this legislative process, because what decides who has to get a vaccine and when is the law, and most of that's the state law. And what decides who can say no and how is in the law. So we've got to participate in the legislative process here if we want to hold on to our rights or, even better, expand them.
Well, they are our elected officials. I mean, you, if you didn't particularly vote, then nonetheless, you got the legislator who somebody else voted for. So these are people that are they're elected, and they are supposed to be accountable to their constituents. And some of the stories that we've heard, Alan, have been disturbing to me. I mean, you know, from people who have gone to town hall meetings and they've listened to their legislators say things like, well, I have to go with just what the majority of the doctors say, you know, without even thinking it through about how it might affect their own constituents. And I had someone else tell me, another state, that they said, well, do you understand that if we give up our rights now, that there's more than 200 vaccines coming down the pipeline, we won't be able to refuse? And the legislator said, oh, that's great, but you mean there's 200 more vaccines? That's just terrific. I mean, there's no thought at all about what this can be like. And I was having a conversation with somebody today. It was actually at the bank. And I went into the bank to do some banking business, and I said, because this has been rattling around in my head, two points real quick. One is that if you're a parent and you have, let's say you have four children, and your first child went through a horrible vaccine reaction, and maybe suffered something like a seizure disorder or had some other complication that came out of the vaccine reaction, and you have saw what this can do to your family firsthand, you've seen firsthand, and you've chosen to not vaccinate your other three children for fear that the same thing may happen to them. And now you could be forced by law to have no other options or no choices but to vaccinate them. That, I mean, how terrifying is that? And for these, the pro-vaccine forces to not take that into any consideration whatsoever, I think is merciless, and I can't even come up with the right word for that. And then the second spot is if you're in a state and maybe you haven't been really paying a whole lot of attention to what's been going on over the last couple of months, and all of these states that are got these that have these bills on the hook, and let's just say for the sake of discussion, several of the bills do get passed and the exemptions do get repealed. And now it comes time for your children to go to school in the fall. And you go to the school and you just ask them for the exemption form that you want to fill out like you have every other year. And the school nurse or the principal or whoever says, oh, well, I'm sorry, that law has changed. And you can no longer file an exemption. You have to have a medical exemption. And your children are 9 and 10 years old. They've never been sick. There's no reason to get a medical exemption. And they've never been vaccinated. Is that going to mean that those kids somewhere in the 6 weeks before school starts, that they're going to have to get 49 doses of 16 different vaccines in order for them to go to school? I mean, it seems as though that these are a couple of points that nobody has thought through.
Well, there are some laws that say you have, now some states will have like a 30-day grace period, and what they'll say is you start the vaccines within that time. You don't necessarily have to get all caught up, but your point is quite valid nonetheless, Sherry, because what's going to be happening is people are going to be on a catch-up schedule in the best of situations, even if they're not trying to do it all within, you know, a very short period of days, even if it's spread out over a few weeks, it's still an assault that goes even beyond, you know.
Well, it's insane. A few weeks.
It is. It is. I mean, I'm not trying to make it lighter here, Sherry.
Well, you are really arguing against me here, Alan. You really are. I mean,
No. I'm just saying that they don't necessarily require you to have them all the vaccines completed within a short period of time. They may require you to start it within a short period of time. But either way, you're still doing a catch-up schedule where you're doing cramming a lot of vaccines in a short period of time that would ordinarily have been over, you know, a period of years or whatever it would be. Even without cramming it together, Sherry, it's horrible. You cram it together, and of course you're going to see, you're the doctor, you tell me, but my guess is you would see a significant increase in the severity and rate of adverse reactions in that setting.
Well, I've known of particular cases. I've known of court cases where it was in the middle of a divorce, and the judge ruled that an 11-year-old had to get caught up on all of their vaccines in a relatively short period of time. And they were given 9 vaccines 1 week, and 2 weeks later they were given another 6 or 7. Ended up with neurological problems, migraine headaches, all kinds of terrible side effects. And who's responsible for that then? And you will not be able to file anything in the vaccine court because how are you going to be able to blame any one of those vaccines when you've gotten 9 of them at the same time?
I wish, while we're still in the legislative process here, that parents with children who have suffered from adverse events or adults who themselves have had adverse events, go see your representatives. And, you know, Sherry, this is you know, when you call your representative and they say, oh, well, this is a medical issue, we're just going to do what the doctors say, you say back to them, no, this is not a medical issue. This is a political issue. I need to speak with you because there's information you don't have about what's going on here. And you be as polite as you can, but at the same time, you be firm and say, you know, there's information that I need to please give me 5 or 10 minutes of your time because there are things going on here that you don't understand. And in as polite a way as you can without making them feel stupid for saying what to them is a very reasonable thing from their perspective. Oh, we'll just let the doctors decide this. Sherry, you and I and our listeners know doctors don't know squat about some of the most important issues here. Some of them have never even heard of the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and I can just about guarantee any legislator who says, oh, we got to let the doctors handle it, has no clue about the existence of that program. Maybe what you say in that point is, Are you aware of the $3 billion that the government has paid out because of people killed and injured by vaccines? Maybe you just ask that one short question, and then if they say, what do you mean? Then you say, I have lots of information to share with you. May I please meet with you? It's not just about what the doctors say. So we're not going to get through to every one of them. Some of them are too biased in their views, or they're too loyal to the pharmaceutical industry, but you do the best you can as a starting place with your own reps. And Sherry, I am not a party person one way or the other, but I think in terms of party, I suspect we're going to have a lot more luck with Republicans than we are with Democrats. That's been my experience here in North Carolina and the impression I've had potentially other places. But, you know, if you're it doesn't matter what party you are or your reps are, you go to your own reps first and you do the best you can. And if you don't succeed there, then maybe you look to see if there are others that you could reach out to, or find people in other districts where you can go with them to see their representatives. And if they won't meet with you and won't talk with you and you've done the best you can, then write them a letter and say, you know, here's the information, you know, that you didn't have time to meet with me about. Please take time to read this. We just got to keep trying, or maybe call back, I don't know, two or three weeks later. Sherry, I'm kind of shooting from the hip here, but failure is not an option here. We're pointing towards a really dark path. And if this agenda significantly succeeds, it's just the next step in an ongoing series of steps, which has been the case for many years already. But it's not like, oh, they're just going to take away a few, and if they don't get the others, then everything's just going to plateau for a while. No, this is just the next step in whatever step follows. So if they succeed in getting rid of philosophical exemptions but not the religious ones, well, they're going to make more restrictive religious ones, or then they're going to go after the religious ones next year. You know, I mean, this is an incremental process, and we don't have the luxury of losing anything at all here. In fact, if possible, we should be pushing the other direction. For example, in most of the states in the eastern part of the country, we don't have a philosophical exemption at all. You know, do you wait until somebody wants to take away the religious exemption to go talk to your state representative? I would say not. Go talk to them anyway and say, here are all the reasons why we need to add a philosophical exemption. I mean, let's push back the other way here. Not just wait for somebody to threaten our rights and react defensively, although, of course, that's obviously what we need to do right now in many states, so let's do that. But it's just really, really important to be active. I've got a list here from a website, National Health Freedom, of some of the bills that are going on, but I've already heard of bills in other states that have been introduced that aren't even on this list that's just a few days old. So it really is a story in progress. But there are bills in Arizona, California, Connecticut, Maine, Minnesota, Missouri, Oregon, Texas, Vermont, Washington, Rhode Island, New Mexico, if not maybe others, related to vaccine exemptions. And we got to pay attention to closely to the wording of these bills. Some of them are just trying to restrict religious exemptions, for example. They want to make you be a member of an organized religion or have a member of the clergy back you up, which, by the way, violates the First Amendment of the Constitution. So if anybody is dealing with that kind of a bill in your state, feel free to email me. I'll give you a legal argument you can take to representatives explaining why that violates the Constitution, that kind of wording. At least would hopefully persuade them into thinking about not trying to pass that kind of language.
I think that the whole issue is that people have got to just keep, what you said already, Alan, I just want to reiterate it. We've got to just keep pushing forward and understanding a few very important things. This is not about measles. This is not about the few vaccine measles or pertussis or mumps or the vaccines that are currently on the schedule. This is about personal choice, personal health freedom, the ability to abstain when you know that there's been bad disasters in your family, or maybe you had a reaction when you were a child, and so now that you're starting to have children, you don't want your children to go through this. It's about a medical tyranny. They call a spade, call it what it is. And they are coming after the adolescents next. There are more than 200 vaccines in the pipeline, mostly targeted towards adolescents and adults. But in order for them to get injury compensation claim protection, they have to put it onto the pediatric schedule. We have to have the right to refuse those if we do not want them. And they're coming after adults. And a lot of adults may be thinking, well, you know, I don't have to worry about this. My kids are all grown, or I don't have kids, or I don't have grandkids yet. It is all about the future. We are at a very important crossroads and a precipice on what our country is going to look like going forward for the next however long in terms of a freedom of choice in healthcare. And we've got to be able to stand up and get these things stopped. So, and I, the gal I was talking to at the bank today, she said, I've lost friends over this. And she said, and I don't care, because I think it's very important to be able to say no. And she was one of the people who said, my son had a really serious reaction in his second round of shots. And my second child, I don't want to put him at risk of something maybe even worse happening. But what if they take this away from me? What if I don't have a right to say no? And what if my doctor doesn't agree with me? Or what if the school insists? I mean, we've got all kinds of problems here, Alan, of taking away rights. And I think that the pro-vaccine people need to get behind the whole concept of freedom of choice. And I've had all kinds of people on my Facebook page say, I don't want to sign those petitions. I'm afraid. I don't want to get on a list. It's like, now is the time. If you've never been brave before in your entire life, now is the time to step it up and be brave.
Well, Sherry, I could, you know, if we went down a path, further and further down this path, there would eventually come a point where it would be genuinely, there could theoretically come a point, hypothetically, where it would be genuinely dangerous to speak out. We're not at that point yet. So while I understand why people realize that they could subject themselves on one level or another to criticism, boy, if you think it's uncomfortable now, it can get a lot worse. And if we don't speak out now, it's going to just keep on going down the path. So we need to speak out while we still can, because if things go far enough down this path generally, there very well could come a time where you can't or you don't dare. Now, Sherry, it's one thing to say to be active, but, you know, a lot of people say, but what do I do? How do I do it? Well, you know, I don't know what to do. And I don't think there's any one right answer to that, but I want to let people know that there's at least one default answer or a good starting place on my website. If you go to vaccinerights.com, there's a bright red link at the top now. And if you click that link, it'll take you to a page with a couple of documents that'll give you some good general information about how to be active legislatively and how to be effective, and some information that you can use as is if you want to, or modify as you deem fit, or borrow from. It's all there for anybody to use any way they want to, that you can give your legislators to say, look, here are some of the key points here that are problems and why we need to keep the right to make an informed choice. And if you can go by yourself, if there's no other way to do it, you know, go see your representative by yourself. Take a brave person maybe to do that, but, you know, they're usually by themselves too, so one-on-one. But if you've got a friend or a coworker or someone who will go with you, that's great. Take a small group if you can, two of you or five of you. You know, the ideal situation might be one person with a confirmed vaccine adverse event story, somebody maybe who's a medical person to offer a more kind of authoritative view from that perspective, or maybe a lawyer or whatever. But, you know, you don't have to be or have any of those things to make a difference. And if you just take some key information, a few bullet point pieces that, you know, that you can get across in 10 minutes time, I guarantee that if you can get 10 minutes of their time, they'll come away with a different understanding. If you present just some of these few key pieces, information about the vaccine injury compensation program and the money they've paid out, or the fact, Sherry, that the AMA has a published ethics opinion that recommends medical, religious, and philosophic exemptions for doctors to immunizations. And if that's what they recommend for doctors, you know, why should they be? Why should we be any different? Why shouldn't we also have those same options? So there's just all kinds of things, you know, that we can say and can do. And let me remind listeners, folks, if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, you're welcome to do that. When you call in, you have to push 1 so that it shows up on our queue, so we know that you're there, that you want to come in and make a comment or ask a question. And you're welcome to do that. Of course, many people call in just to listen, and that is terrific as well. And we see a lot of people who are listening by phone this evening, and delighted to have you all with us. Well,
yeah,
Sherry, there's one other thing.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. You're fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just going to switch topics here. That I've had several people contact me in the last several days, maybe a couple of weeks or so, with different versions of the same story. And the story is, everything has been fine, except now after this, you know, measles thing has kicked off for a while, that the daycare now says, you know, some parents have called in and are really uncomfortable if there are any unvaccinated kids in the daycare or the school. And so all of a sudden the daycare is saying, well, nobody here, no children who are unvaccinated can stay here unless they get a measles vaccine in the next, whatever, 10 days, 30 days or something like that. And they're understandably, if so frustratingly to those of us who see what's going on, they're seeing the mainstream news, they're feeling insecure and unsafe about it, and they want to appease those parents who are equally well-meaning but uninformed and are scared because, you know, their child's going to die because their child's vaccine will magically not work because they're unvaccinated kids in the school. You know, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be offensively critical, but Sherry, it's just so frustrating, you know, to see how crazy it is, and to, as understanding as we might be, to nevertheless see how many people still just don't, you know, understand what's going on. But they're being pumped with incomplete and false information in the mainstream news. So, you know, it's not like we can really fault them. But what do we do about this? So people are calling me, hey, all of a sudden I'm being told my child has to get a measles shot, and we have a perfectly valid exemption.
Well, I'm wondering if, I mean, this used to work a long time ago, and, you know, times have changed. I don't know if this would still be valid. But, you know, there was this thing that was going around for a while that's saying, you know, if your doctor insists on you getting the vaccine, have them sign an affidavit that says, okay, in the event that you give this to my child against my will and something happens, you will be held responsible for this. You know, do we know for sure if the school principal it falls under the vaccine court in terms of protection, like the doctor does and like the pharmaceutical industry does? I mean, I know when I was growing up, when I was a kid, I was not vaccinated at all when I was a kid, and neither were any of my cousins. And my dad was a chiropractor, and my uncle was a chiropractor, and both of them went to the school. And this was years ago, before we had all this contentiousness that we have now. And the school had said that we needed to, you know, get these shots. And at the time, there were only 3, DPT, MMR, and polio. And I remember my uncle told this story many times, that he just told the principal flat out, I'll get my kids vaccinated, but in the event that anything happens to them, you're going to be held personally responsible. Now, is there anywhere in that injury compensation program or in any of that a liability protection for the drug companies and the doctors that principals are not accountable?
Well,
I don't know the answer,
Sherry,
to that.
This is an idea that circulates from time to time and has over a number of years. Periodically, I see it get passed around the alternative vaccine community. This is what I call a feel-good. The idea of, oh, let's, you know, put a form in front of them, you know, and tell them to sign this saying they'll take responsibility. Nobody's going to sign that, of course, and so then you won't have to get the vaccines. I actually think it's a very dangerous thing to do, and let me tell you why. First of all, they're not legally required to sign a form, but you may be legally required to get vaccines. Now, in the case where, you know, a daycare is sort of taking it upon themselves, we're not going to let anybody stay here unless they get a flu shot, or I mean a measles shot or whatever it would be. That's a situation where they are possibly confused about whether or not they actually have the right to do that. When you have private schools and private daycares, the general notion is that, oh, we're private, so we can do whatever we want to, and if we want to make, you know, a flu shot or a, I'm sorry, I keep saying flu shot here, a measles shot, a condition of being enrolled here now, we can do that. There are some different issues with that. You know, if there's already a contract in writing, unless the contract says that they can change the terms anytime, then they probably can't. And there's a whole separate issue about if the state says that the exemption applies to the private schools, then I don't know that they can unilaterally require, you know, additional shots randomly. And it's whether, you know, it's a whole separate question as to whether or not anybody at the school is actually able to have a conversation where you might be able to say things like, well, do you realize that there are 5 to 10% of the vaccinated kids who aren't immune either because the vaccines don't work in everybody? Did you know,
yeah,
do you realize there are more, you know, more of them, more of the vaccinated people who aren't immune than there are exempt people?
Yeah, but that wasn't the question. And I was asking it because I don't know the answer to it. I mean, you know,
well,
employers.
I don't know the language of the... I don't know the language of the law off the top of my head, but anybody who's involved with the administration of a vaccine is shielded as well as the manufacturers. That's my understanding. But the point, the issue with the vaccine is that if somebody is injured, if it's a vaccine that's listed on the, you know, listed under the program, then your only option at that point is to go to the program. So even if there were some state law that would give rise to some sort of claim against the principal or somebody else, it would be superseded by the federal compensation law. So it's really, my understanding is your only option is that program. It's a separate question, and it's a good question, Sherry, but it's a separate question as to whether or not they have the legal authority to require it in the first place. And I think they probably don't, at least over, well, I don't know. I mean, the answer can vary from situation to situation.
That's the question I've had about employers other than the healthcare profession requiring flu shots, and the school principals who are pushing forth these whole concepts, and people that own private daycares. I mean, people like this, people who have daycares in their home. And so I don't know, Alan. I guess the reason that I'm bringing it up is because I feel like some of our arguments get stale because it's like a scratch in the record. We use the same ones over and over again, other than trying to explore other avenues and other ways to get the attention of people, to get the attention of employers, of state legislators, of different ways to be able to get their attention and to try to get different because they hear the same message over and over again, and it's like their brain gets numb. They can't hear it anymore they've heard it so many times.
Yeah, well, once any of these people, principal, employer, whoever, once they lock into their position, this is what we're going to do, and whether they're thinking consciously, I'm scared, that's why I'm doing it, emotionally, that's what's going on, you know, this is what we're going to do, we're not going to risk liability for not requiring a vaccine. You know, I had an employee in a company contact me recently, and the employer decided to require vaccines because their attorney told them that they could be held liable if they didn't require vaccines and somebody got sick and it was their fault for not requiring the vaccine. And I just have to, you know, sort of laugh to keep from crying, because this was a situation where a person was claiming religious objections, and that brings up a whole different area of law. Where the employer has potential liability is if they don't allow the exemption, not because they didn't require vaccines. But once they lock into a position because of their opinion or fear about the need for a vaccine, you're not going to sway them most of the time unless you can present a legal threat. And I'm not saying that the way to approach it is to be threatening It might depend on the specific situation, who you're talking with. But the point is, they're not going to budge unless they have to. That's what I mean in sort of common sense terms. And the way that somebody has to is if there's a legal right involved and they are then ultimately at risk of being liable for something, and then they'll pay attention and potentially shift their position. But if they're coming from a place of it's not going to be my fault that somebody dies from measles, it's really hard to get those people to pay attention to anything other than a clear legal right that somebody has that requires them to get off of their position.
Well, Alan, I think we've missed our commercial break, so I think we ought to go to the commercial, and then we always seem to run out of time to take calls from our listeners, and so we can, well, as soon as we come back, let's open the boards up to callers and see if we can get as many callers as we can in tonight.
Sounds great. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to take a short break here, but we will be right back, so stay with us, folks.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. Real. My fatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called UltraRush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. UltraRush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, A-L-T-E-R, Rush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Attorney Alan Phillips. Just a couple of quick announcements here. I want to let you know where you can find us on the web. We've got three or four websites here for Sherry. Let's see if we can get them all listed off here. drtenpenny.com, drtenpenny.com, tenpennyimc.com, tenpennyimc.com. My personal favorite, vaccineresearchlibrary.com, with 6,500 or more and growing all the time, a peer-reviewed published medical research paper showing problems with vaccines. That's the vaccineresearchlibrary.com. and Sherry's new site, edgytruth.com. Boy, that just sounds like such a great project and site, Sherry. I'm really looking forward to see how that one unfolds over time, but it's off to a great start already. That's edgytruth.com. And my site, vaccinerights.com, and let you know that on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Time, the Vaccine Agenda Internet Radio Show, also here on blogtalkradio.com/The Vaccine Agenda. And you can subscribe to the Vaccine Rights e-newsletter at vaccinerights.com and get weekly updates on vaccine news and radio shows and vaccine legal issues. So encourage folks to use that as a way of staying in touch. And Sherry, I forgot to mention earlier because we kept going back and forth, really do encourage folks to join the NVIC Advocacy Portal. And that's NVIC for National Vaccine Information Center, NVICAdvocacy.org. That's the place to go to keep up with what's going on with vaccine bills around the country, what's going on in your state. And if you sign up there, they'll tell you who your representatives are and how to get a hold of them. So it is the easiest way to be legislatively active. And they also have terrific information about what to do and how to do it to be effective as a vaccine legislative activist. So I tell you, we've gotten to the point, Sherry, where it just doesn't take that much time to be involved, but it is critical that you do be involved. So if you do nothing else, go to the NVICAdvocacy.org website. And again, there's also information at vaccinerights.com about that. Well, we do have one caller on the line. Sherry, how about we go to the caller?
Perfect.
Area code 423, you're on the air. Welcome to the Know Your Rights Hour.
Yeah, hi, this is Heather from Tennessee, and I just wanted to thank you all for everything you're doing for our rights. And I've been following closely, and I have a question. I have four unvaccinated children. One is in college, who's going to be 21, and then I have a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old in high school, and then I have a 3-year-old. So if these mandates get passed and all these laws, where do my high schoolers come into play? I mean, they've never had a vaccine, and, you know, how would that work out?
Well, that's exactly what I just said. And at the very, I don't know if you were with us at the beginning of the
no,
hour.
No, I wasn't.
But
I wasn't at all. I just came in late. So,
okay. So what I said was exactly your concern. Yeah, is that you've got a completely unvaccinated teenagers, and now you go to the school to turn on your exemption, and they say, "Oh, well, we're really sorry." And so now, as teenagers, does that mean that your kids have to get 69 doses of 16 different vaccines? Pretty close to that many, be a few less than that because they haven't had all the flu shots. We don't know the answer to that. Alan seems to think that they could say, well, you have to start now and we're going to give you several weeks. But several weeks to get that many injections is just criminal. And these are some of the things that I don't think that have been really thought through at all with these bills.
Part of the problem here is we don't know what it's going to look like because the laws are, you know, vary state to state, and any change, any proposed change could either not go through at all or could go through as originally drafted or could get rewritten once or twice or five times before it does go through. So we won't know what we're dealing with until we get there. And so whether a high schooler would be required to get no vaccines or some vaccines or all vaccines and whether they'd be required to get them all, you know, in a week or a month or whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, this is totally up for grabs in terms of, you know, what the wording in any given law may be. So this is all the more reason why it's important for us to pay attention to what's going on, primarily in our own states in terms of, has a bill been introduced, and if it has been, walk through the process with it or watch it as it walks through the process. Now, I think probably every state in the country at this point has a legislative website, and you can go to your legislature's website. You can search the bills, You can plug in words like immunization or vaccine and pull up the bill. And they usually are very transparent about the process. You know, they usually have a legislative history for the bill. And you can see when it was introduced. And here's the version that was introduced. And if there have been changes in the wording, here's the latest version. And if it's gone through the health committee or some other committee, which usually is what happens with bills, they'll go through some sort of committee, one or more committees, where they could die or be reworded or whatever, but then they'll go through some other process, and then eventually it comes up for a vote if it gets that far, if it hasn't died for some reason before then. And you can watch this process from the outside by just logging on to your legislative website, and if you happen to already know the bill number, you can search by bill number, but if not, you can put in keywords like immunization or exemption and see if you can locate the bill that way. But then once you have the number, you can just go back, you know, use that number every time. So it's easy for anybody to monitor, you know, from the internet in most, if not all, states these days. And again, if you're with the NVIC Advocacy Portal, you can usually be right on top of learning when there is something in your state to watch. If you haven't done it by just searching your own legislature's website to see if there's something there.
Oh, yes, I've been following closely, and I will have to say thank you to Dr. Tenpenny for a recent post I follow on Facebook that said, if you haven't been brave before, now's the time. And I've always been one to just lay under the radar, you know, and what, seeing all the other posts from all the other people that were supporting everyone, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to sign this bill, and I'm going to sign the California Chiropractic Association bill as well, and my husband's a chiropractor here in Tennessee, and I just sent an email this morning to the Tennessee Chiropractic Association with different links to hopefully get them to send out a mass email of you know, what to alert them of what's going on. We have a mandate in Tennessee that would require the meningitis vaccine for on campus, you know, and that's just a little blurb they're putting out there to see how far they can push, I think, and, you know, watching California and Washington and Oregon and everything else. But so it just really gave me the strength, really looking at everyone else's comments. It's just, now is the time, and my husband's a third-generation chiropractor, and we've just we all have kind of a consensus that yes, you have a right to choose what goes into your body, and divine intelligence, you know, is better than man-made ego. If you look at the history of man, it's not too comforting with medicine and all that, but I can't believe that I'm even talking to you all, because I signed in really late and I pushed one, and I'm the caller, and usually I would have taken notes and everything, but I was like, I can't believe I was up for the queue. But anyway, I do appreciate everything, and I do pray for everyone that's, you know, fighting for our rights, and I think they know that consciousness among the fear is what is not a good thing, and people watch the news. I haven't watched the news about the measles in a long time, and actually we're getting ready to go to Las Vegas for our spring break, all of our children, and I just saw on the news or wherever it was on Facebook that measles were in MGM Grand, and I'm sitting here thinking, are you kidding me? Like, what next? But I just, you know, try not to worry about it. And my kids had the chicken pox when they were actually, my three younger ones had the chicken pox when they were in elementary school, and never heard anything about anyone else in the whole school having it. And I'm wondering if they obviously didn't have a mutated version, not the wild version, and where is the immunity? Is that lifelong immunity if they got it from a shedding other child, or how does that work? I mean, there's so many questions. So I don't know.
Sherry, I don't know if you have an answer to that one or not, but thank you for your call. Really appreciate it.
If you've engaged the infection from both sides of the equation, meaning that you've developed a fever, you've gotten a rash, it somehow expressed the TH1 side of the equation for the infection, you will then develop an antibody,
And I believe that you have, that in all likelihood, you will have a lifelong immunity. Now, lifetime immunity, I don't know. I'm not even sure that everybody who's had the real infection has immunity for 100% for the rest of their life, but you're more likely to have a lifetime of immunity if you've actually had the illness. So, I mean, I don't know why everybody is so horrified of measles. I mean, talk to anybody over the age of 50. Everybody had it. And if you have an opportunity to go online and go to YouTube and put in Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, measles, and listen to her presentation on the measles vaccine and on measles that she gave last year in Scandinavia. And she talked to people who were in the audience and said, have you ever seen anybody who actually went blind, lost their hearing, had encephalitis? I mean, none of these older people had ever heard of such a thing. And so everybody's so horrified of their kids getting a fever. Get over it. You know, it's better for them to take their immune system out and run it around the track.
All right, we've had three other people chime in here. We've got about 7 minutes left to see if we can get to how many of we can get
Perfect.
To here. We have somebody, area code 870. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to thank
Sure.
you so much for what you're doing. And I also have a question. My husband is currently in the military. And when I started hearing about this whole vaccine frenzy and the measles outbreak, my first thought was, could this have been something that they contrived to push an agenda? Because back in November of 2014, a new vaccine schedule came out for the military members. It was in a new adult schedule, and the MMR was on that along with chickenpox and I believe a couple of others. So I'm just wondering, because I know the military a lot of times gets the first, you know, I mean, they're pushed with all kinds of vaccines, but I find it kind of odd that this new schedule came out, this new adult schedule, and then now this whole push on the general population. What's your opinion on that?
I haven't heard anything about this possibly being a fabricated outbreak, although I certainly, you know, I always ask that question now. I'm real cynical about it. Sherry, have you by any chance heard anything one way or another about that?
It was a lot of talk hypothesized about that for lots of different reasons. It'd be really hard to prove it, but, you know, we've got 170, I just heard on the news tonight, there's now 170 cases of measles, and last year there were 460. And we've created legislation, we've created hysteria, we've created everything under the sun about these cases of measles, when last year there were 460. And every 4 to 7 years we have a small uptick in the measles virus that sort of runs its course and goes away. And so it's I don't know that there's anything that I've heard other than that.
Okay. Let's see if we can catch one or two more callers here. Area code 812, you're on the air. Have you got a question or comment?
Yeah, Alan, this is Jody Coker again.
Hi, Jody.
I was having a question about, I see the biggest argument towards this stuff is, well, what about the people who are immune compromised or those who are too young to get it? And I pretty much think I know what the answer is to this, it's probably for Dr. Timpany, is that I've got a John Hopkins pamphlet that they give out to immune-compromised patients when they go home, and it actually says on there, do not be around people who are getting the live polio, chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella. And from where I, you know, what I feel is that the reason is because you can get it if you're around these people because they shed it. Is that correct?
That is correct, and I have seen that pamphlet. That is exactly what you say that it is. But if you have leukemia, if you are on chemotherapy, you should stay home. You should not be around people that are sick, and you should not be around recently vaccinated people.
So, like I said, I'm just beside myself with this. We have two daughters that are not vaccinated, and your question bringing up what are you going to do as far as doing the whole catch-up with this. But, you know, if they're wanting to start vaccinating the whole population, is this basically correct that most of these don't last for more than 2 to 10 years is what the CDC says as far as the waning immunity. Is
that correct? I know that the hepatitis B vaccine has antibodies up to about 7 years. The longest one that I've seen in print was the rubella, was about 12 years. And there have been some small studies on tetanus antibodies saying that if you've had one tetanus shot, that in some cases people can still have traces of tetanus antibodies up to 50 years later. But the thing is that we are identifying antibody as the key to immunity, and we know that it's not. And so they're just using. I've always said that I think that an antibody that comes after a vaccine is a marker of contamination. That your body has been wounded, and it has created this antibody to try to help your blood heal. And it's but the pro-vaccine community and all of the literature says if you've got an antibody, then that means you're immune. Which there is a large body of literature that shows that people that have had very high antibody levels and have gotten the infection anyway.
Okay. The last thing I'd like to mention is that are you aware of the epidemic of 89, 90, 91?
Of
where
what?
They had,
and that,
with measles?
Of the measles. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. There were like 55,000 cases in those 3 years. I'll get off here real quick, but you should read it because when you start reading it, to me, it seems like they actually caused it because they came out with a second MMR recommendation in 89, and they actually go into that most of the demographics also changed on who was getting it, not the 5 to 19-year-olds. It changed to older population and under 5. I'm just pointing that out. That I think it's an interesting read to see what they say, because it kind of looks like to me that they actually caught, there was waning immunity, then they came back and started giving this, and you started giving it, the older kids started giving it, it looked like, to their younger brothers and sisters.
It could very well be. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read the book Germs, but Germs talks about all of the different biological weaponry that has been tried out on the citizenry, either by aerosol spraying or by injections for decades. I mean, that's the book, the name of that book is Germs. It talks about it in great detail.
All right.
Fascinating.
I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thanks for listening to me, and I'll probably be calling next week.
All
please
right.
Do.
Thanks
to,
for calling in.
Yeah, thanks to all the people who called in this evening. Sherry, we're down to the last few moments here, but I just wanted to mention I encountered a study, I think it was 1989, that was a meta-study looking at a group of studies in which highly and even fully vaccinated populations had measles outbreaks, and the CDC identified even one population that was 100% vaccinated and had an outbreak. And the conclusion of the meta-study was that measles is a disease such that as immunization rates rise, then measles becomes a disease of vaccinated people. That was their conclusion, which was really quite striking. We got to we got to zip out of here already, Sherry. The hour has zipped by.
Like they
you
always
have
do,
been,
Alan. They really do.
and may they continue to do so. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesday afternoons beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We are here every Monday, folks. Thanks for being with us tonight, and we hope to see you again next week. Take care.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destinies. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be
the masters of our destinies. For we must be the masters of our destinies. For we must be the masters of our destinies.